Chapter 5. Lee Harvey Oswald. Who was Lee Harvey Oswald? The answer to that simple question might help solve the riddle that is the Kennedy assassination. Was he a young man of above-average intelligence with an inflated sense of self-importance who had grown increasingly frustrated with his lot in life? Or was he a low-level asset of the CIA or other U.S. intelligence agency? Is it possible he was a little of both? Oswald was born into a working-class New Orleans family in 1939. His father died 2 weeks before he was born, making his economic circumstances even more grim. The youngest son of a single mother who worked as a nurse to support her family, he didn't get much supervision or attention. He also moved around a lot, as his mother Marguerite took a number of different jobs. In New York, he skipped so much school he was charged with truancy and was examined by a psychiatrist, Dr. Renatus Hartogs. Hartogs found in his young patient a vivid fantasy life, turning on the topics of omnipotence and power, through which he tries to compensate for his present shortcomings and frustrations. Back in New Orleans at age 15, Oswald discovered socialism. To him, he confessed to his diary, it seemed to explain everything that was wrong with his life. He would continue to espouse socialist views for the rest of his life. Most socialists, however, tend to be idealists and, when they look for a profession, choose fields that promote humanity or work for justice. They don't usually join the United States Marine Corps. But that's exactly what Oswald did just as soon as he could at age 17. Oswald idealized his older brother Robert, who was an ex-Marine, so perhaps that influenced Lee's determination to join the Corps. Also, the military then, as it does now, offered a way out for many young people who see very little in the way of an economic future for themselves. It also provided a path out from under his domineering mother. But it should also be noted, at the same time Oswald declared himself a socialist, he became a devoted fan of a new television series, I Led Three Lives. The program was based on the life of Boston ad man Herbert Philbrick, who infiltrated the Communist Party USA on behalf of the FBI. In the program, the main character pretended to be a communist in order to spy for the U.S. government. The series aired for 2.5 years, when Oswald was between the ages of 14 and 16. Family members say it was one of his favorite shows. As a teenager, Oswald was also a cadet member of the Civil Air Patrol, a U.S. Air Force auxiliary organization not known for being a hotbed of socialism. At one time, David Ferry was an advisor to Oswald's cadet group. In fact, there still exists a photograph of the group with both Ferry and Oswald in the picture. By the time he entered the Marine Corps, Lee Oswald appeared to be a bundle of contradictions. In Marine Corps basic training, Oswald was required to qualify on the rifle range. This apparently was the only formal instruction he ever received with a rifle, and is the source of some confusion about his shooting ability or lack thereof. After the assassination, Oswald was described as a sharpshooter in the Marine Corps, which sounds like he was accomplished with a rifle. In reality, he scored slightly above the minimum for the sharpshooter designation, which was the middle of 3 shooting classifications. 3 years later, his minimal skill had diminished, as he scored just above the qualifying mark for marksman, the lowest of the 3 classifications. The fact that Oswald's score went down is not unusual. Firing a rifle accurately takes lots of practice, and Oswald was not in the Marines to fire rifles. The point is, he was not a particularly good shot. Oswald's primary duty as a Marine was a radar operator, a position that required a security clearance. He received it after a background check turned up no derogatory information. He scored very high on his radar course exams and served at El Toro, California, before being assigned to the Naval Air Facility at Atsugi, Japan. Much has been made of this deployment since it was assumed this was where he was recruited by a U.S. or even Soviet intelligence service. Since Atsugi was a base for U-2 spy planes flying over the Soviet Union, It is assumed there were plenty of CIA personnel and KGB agents around. While in the Marines, Oswald learned to speak and write Russian, which is somewhat unusual for an enlisted man. While some sources say Oswald's Russian was only rudimentary and a Marine proficiency exam he took in 1959 rated his command of the language as poor, Marina said when she first met Lee in Minsk, his Russian was so good she assumed he was a native. However, almost everyone else who heard him speak Russian said he didn't speak it particularly well. In 1959, Oswald applied for and received a hardship discharge from the Marine Corps, citing the need to care for his mother. He was given an honorable discharge and released from active duty on September 11th, but he spent almost no time with his mother. 9 days later, he was on a boat for France with the stated purpose of attending college in Switzerland. Instead, he flew from France to Finland, where, in less than 5 days, he received a visa to enter the Soviet Union. The speed at which he received permission to visit the country is noteworthy in that it took most people 2 weeks or more to get a visa. Lee Oswald arrived in Moscow on October 16, 1959, 2 days before his 20th birthday. Oswald immediately told Soviet authorities he wanted to become a Soviet citizen and stay in the country, but his request was rejected. At the time, the U.S. government was running a fake defector program, sending young men to the Soviet Union who said they wanted to defect, but who were in reality spies. It can be assumed the KGB was aware of this program and was leery of young men who fit the program's profile. However, after Oswald visited the U.S. Embassy and stated his desire to defect and his intention to turn over any military information he possessed to the Soviets, the Russians suddenly changed their mind. They sent him to Minsk and gave him a routine job in an electronics factory. It turned out to be a pretty good job. In the Soviet Union, everyone's living accommodations were assigned by the government, and Oswald was given what amounts to a furnished waterfront condo in a prestigious building with a balcony overlooking the river.